Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to Puma Podcast. This special series was developed with the support of Journalism Fund Europe.
We have a housing project. They said they donated 12 million. So, with Jeff and everything. Out of 12 million, it's only 3 million that they put in. So, us, how much can you provide us copy? They will not. Yeah. Even the cost of putting up evacuation centers, they will not give you. I don't know why.
Yeah.
It's it should have been transparent.
Welcome to episode 2 of this special series by Teka Teka News. Puma Podcast produced this in time for the 10th anniversary of Typhoon Haiyan.
The EU citizens pay taxes to the EU and therefore need to have trust in the system, that their hard-earned money is handled responsibly.
I'm Bella Perez Rubio, and in this episode, we take a closer look at the issues plaguing the Philippine government's permanent housing program in Tacloban, a coastal city ravaged by Haiyan, over a decade ago.
Siguro para sa akin,
for me, we're still not okay. I don't have permanent work, only odd jobs. Others are also hard up. We are still hard up.
In the first episode, we heard survivors talk about the challenges of moving far from the coast and the sea, their main sources of livelihood, and how the resettlement effort failed to deliver on the promise to build back better. Rain fell hard and fast, 4 times faster and harder than what the Weather Bureau calls heavy rains. Wind speeds were at 315 kilometers per hour. Storm surges 5 to 6 meters high hit the coastal areas. The Category 5 typhoon swept through central Philippines and knocked out power, telecommunications, and water supplies. In Typhoon Haiyan's wake, 6,300 people lost their lives and 1.1 million lost their homes. Over 16 million were affected and more than 4 million were displaced.
Nakulong ako.
I was jailed for 4 years, but our government housing still wasn't finished when I got out. There was no finishing. When I got there, there was no door, so I had to buy one. No bathroom and no windows. So I had to fix it little by little.
As you just heard, housing is still underway, and the results have been unsatisfactory, to say the least. It begs the question, what happened to the money? Over $1 billion pledged by governments and institutions around the world to Haiyan survivors. It's a question that's proved nearly impossible to answer.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ah, si Mitchie ako, si Mitchie. Umpad, 57 na.
Mitchie's experience of Haiyan was harrowing, but still better than most. His wife, his children, and his siblings all survived the storm. But his luck ended there. In 2016, Rodrigo Duterte won the presidency and launched his bloody nationwide war on drugs.
Noong 2017, nahuli ako, halos 4 na taon, nahuli ako ng drugs. Kaya naisip ko, paglabas ko, doon na kami titira sa bahay namin. Oo, pagpunta ko doon, hindi pa tapos.
By the time Mitchie was picked up by law enforcement in 2017, it had already been 4 years since Haiyan left his home in ruins. When he was freed in 2021, the house the government had promised him was still unfinished.
Kami, nabigyan kami sa barangay ng bahay.
We were given a house by the government in New Hope near Santa Elena. Our house wasn't finished yet. So many things were still broken. There were no lights. So we had to fix it.
As you heard him mention at the top of this episode, there was plenty wrong with the house. 4 years in jail, and still, there was no door, there was no bathroom, and the windows needed fixing. And even after shelling out money and labor to finish the house the government promised to build, Mitchie and his wife couldn't live there.
We don't get to live there. Only our kids do because it's hard. There's no work there.
I met Mitchie in his other home in Barangay 57 of Tacloban City. It's within walking distance of both the coast and the city center. Technically, areas like his are now no-build zones, meaning no one should be living there. Instead, most Tacloban City residents who lost their homes to Haiyan are required to live in resettlement sites that are about 30 to 40 minutes away by car.
Oh, nandito ako kasi
I'm here because fishing, that's what we do. That's our only source of income here. Before Yolanda, we were already here.
Mitchie has a wife and 8 kids, but they live separately, across a total of 3 houses. Like he said, his younger kids live in the house the government gave them. It's a 25-minute drive away.
Only my kids are there because that's where they study.
His wife and his older children, the ones who aren't studying anymore, live a few neighborhoods away in Barangay 62B. Another area closer to the city center.
Because she's a seamstress, that's our biggest source of income.
They see each other once a week, on Sunday.
For me, we're still not okay. I don't have permanent work, only odd jobs. Others are also hard up. We are still hard up.
So where did the money go? That's what I tried to figure out with the help of Sandra Rasmussen. She's a reporter from Danwatch, an investigative media outlet based in Denmark. After months of researching on opposite sides of the world, we met in Tacloban. For months now, we've been trying to track European aid sent to the Philippines for the Yolanda rehabilitation effort. And the central part of that rehabilitation effort is the permanent housing program, a big chunk of which is being executed here in Tacloban City. So I think my first Freedom of Information request went out in 2022. I sent one to our Department of Budget and Management asking how much foreign aid was received for Yolanda survivors, specifically for the permanent housing project. And then I sent another one to the National Housing Authority asking for the same data. I also reached out to a former Budget Department employee who used to run a transparency server 2 administrations ago, right after Yolanda, tracking foreign aid as it was coming in. Unfortunately, all 3 of those attempts came up short.
And I've looked into the European side of it. So how much money has the EU dispersed to the Philippines in the aftermath of Yolanda? First of all, I went through all the EU databases showing how much money the EU has dispersing over the years in humanitarian aid and development. I can say that they did indeed send aid to the Philippines, but not who the beneficiary are and what demands there were.
The databases I'm talking about are, just to mention a few, the EU Aid Explorer, EDRES, and the Financial Tracking Service from the United Nations. According to the databases, EU and its member states disbursed around 180 million euro to help those affected by Yolanda. But the databases didn't disclose much else. So I've tried asking some questions to the EU about how the EU monitors disbursements of aid and development aid, but until this day, I still haven't heard a word.
I was told by the National Housing Authority that the money for its permanent housing program comes from the yearly budget, so it had no information as to how much of that is foreign aid, if at all, because the agency itself didn't receive any foreign aid directly. And then the budget department sent me outdated information as of 2015. And just for context, 2016 is when people started moving into the houses. Again, that's data as of almost 8 years ago, and it did not provide an accounting of how those funds were utilized. Donations from the European Union and EU member states reached over $100 million. In 2014, the United Kingdom said it donated $83 million. That would make them the top foreign donor to Yolanda survivors. The UK was still a member of the EU when Yolanda struck and for several years after. But the numbers vary a lot. According to a 2014 European Union report, the total EU aid, including assistance from EU member states, amounted to over 180 million euros.
So I've reached out to several spokespersons in the EU just to know more about how does the EU humanitarian aid works. Because it's a big system and it's a very bureaucratic system. So there are a lot of entities and they are sometimes intertwined. Yeah. The thing is, when I tried to reach out, most of them didn't reply. And when they did reply, it was more you have to, request for a file. So I did that. I've submitted multiple requests for a request to the EU. And it's been 3 months ago.
The Foreign Aid Transparency Hub was launched by the Philippine government in 2013, specifically to allow monitoring of the aid pouring in from all over the world. But it didn't last long.
The former budget department employee who ran that transparency server said that server is now defunct, which is very easy to confirm because we can't access it anymore, and the server never got into utilization. And she also told us that it's very hard to track utilization because utilization is highly dependent on the donor's decision on the type of donation and recipient. And the national government also can't compel non-government entities to provide utilization reports. Have you submitted freedom of information requests to the EU before? And if you did, how long did it take?
It depends. I've waited a year once, yeah. Normally, they have 15 days to respond to a FOIA request, but they never do. So you're kind of in a dead end at the moment.
In terms of tracking.
Exactly, the money trail from the EU. We can say that they did send money, but not if they did any audit reports or monitoring.
There could have been no terms.
Yeah, and I think that's the whole issue here. Yeah, especially from a European point of view, because all the countries send in or give some money to the EU, and they need to have trust in that the EU handled those money responsibly.
And part of the mission was also to try to see if we could make more inroads in terms of trying to find rehabilitation funds donated by foreign countries and NGOs. But unfortunately, the regional manager of the National Housing Authority here told us the same thing, which is that their budget does come from the central government via yearly allocations. The National Housing Authority didn't receive foreign aid directly, and it's unclear if what they do receive from the yearly budget is foreign aid. And we spoke to a professor from the University of the Philippines, Tacloban, who has been researching the Yolanda response basically ever since the storm's aftermath.
I'm talking there about Professor Lady Lynn Mangada. You heard her voice on the first episode of this series.
And she told us the same thing, that her working theory after years of trying to track foreign aid also is that it all went to a central budget. But because it all went to a central budget or to the central government, it's hard to track where that money is given out and where it goes because it's not accounted for. Around that same time, the first quarter of 2023, I sent out emails to the Philippine Red Cross and to the Embassy of the European Union. This was around the time that we started reaching out as well to the Danish Embassy, the US Embassy.
These were top donors in the aftermath of Yolanda, or top pledgers at least, because we also don't know how many of these funds were received. This is based on pledges, as far as I know. And we got a response from Denmark, telling us basically that on their end, the funds that they gave were accounted for. And Denmark was actually the only embassy to get back to us. The European Union didn't get back to us, the US Embassy didn't get back to us, the Philippine Red Cross, which I think is one of the biggest recipients in terms of NGOs, also didn't get back to us.
I reached out to the UN because they got a lot of money from the EU. I think it's important to say that most of the money, you have to differ between emergency aid, yes, and the rehabilitation development.
Let's be more clear on that. So, as I said earlier, the EU consists of a lot of different bodies and agencies. One of them is the European Civil Protection and Humanitarian Aid Operations, also called ECHO. ECHO is responsible for rendering emergency aid for victims of war, conflicts, and natural disasters, meaning ECHO was also behind the first humanitarian aid for Yolanda survivors. What's important to know about that, though, is that ECHO always disperses money through NGOs, never foreign governments, and the monitoring of aid is therefore mostly a responsibility of the NGOs.
When it comes to Denmark, it is indeed true that all the money went through NGOs and not directly to the Philippine government.
I think one of the conclusions that we reached after hitting all these dead ends is that most of the money was probably coursed through NGOs. And for Denmark, at least, that's probably why they feel confident that these funds are accounted for.
They can account for it, exactly.
But then we've also been trying to get reports, updates, how the money has been spent, you know, details. And we haven't really gotten that either.
No. So again, most of the money from the EU went to the NGOs, and then they count on the NGOs to oblige to whatever demands the EU have. Or has. But there are 40 million euros from the EU to the Philippine government. And I still hope I'll get some kind of answer in terms of, you know, the demands of the funding and who the money went to.
It's 30 million euro, not 40. But what's interesting about this particular funding is the recipient. So, in 2014, the European Commission decided to give an additional 30 million to the Philippine government to further boost the European Union's reconstruction assistance in the wake of Typhoon Yolanda. This according to an EU press release. And since the recipient is the Philippine government, it's more likely that the funding, or at least some of it, was used for national housing projects. But whether or not this has been the case, that's the question here, right?
Okay, so we're looking for Barangay 97, which is supposed to be...
Despite months of research, several interview requests, and waiting for our FOIAs, we still don't know where that money went. In other words, we hit a dead end, to be honest. But we do know of a separate housing project funded by the EU that cost 9.7 million euros. The housing project was part of the EU's package of assistance, delivered through UNDP's Project Recovery. Project Recovery was meant to help families affected by Typhoon Yolanda. The question is whether or not this housing project was successful. So we went to see it for ourselves.
Okay, so we found UNDP housing. This looks about right. The roofs are blue. The houses are white.
I'm recognizing the water tank. Yeah.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Okay, so we can now confirm the photos that we saw on the website are real.
Yeah.
It exists. My initial reaction, we just came like 5 minutes ago, we were at Ridgeview, which is a National Housing Authority structure. And my initial reaction is this immediately looks better. This is private housing.
UNDP Village is significantly smaller than the other private and public housing sites we've seen, with just 55 houses inside. It's in Barangay 97, about a 20-minute drive from the city center. Like every other relocation site we've seen that was built by non-government organizations, it's markedly better than the ones built by the National Housing Authority.
Ako po si Elsa Lucero.
I'm Elsa Lucero.
I used to live in Barangay 61. Now we're here, relocated to Barangay 97.
Elsa is a stay-at-home mother of eight. After Yolanda, she and her family waited in a bunkhouse for nearly 4 years for their home. Still, they were more fortunate than others like Michi, who was released from prison in 2021, only to find that the house the government promised his family didn't even have a door or a working bathroom.
It's just the livelihood that's hard for us. And then the children's school is far. When we don't have money, they can't go to school.
Elsa has six kids still going to school. It costs 200 pesos, nearly $4, to get them there and back each day.
My husband was a fisherman, but not anymore.
Now Elsa's husband works odd jobs in the city. That commute costs them 200 pesos each day too. Still, Elsa says life at the UNDP village is better overall.
It's better here. It used to be smelly where we lived. And now we can stay in our house when it storms. Before, we used to evacuate right away. Here, we can just stay.
And I asked how her house compared to the others built by the national government.
Oh.
The help was over and above. Oh, it's really far from our house. Because we constructed this.
Kami ang nag-construct dito, hindi kalagay kanila, pinapakyat talaga.
In our first episode, Professor Mangada told us one of the major reasons that government housing has fallen short for beneficiaries is the simple fact that they weren't consulted. Family size, location, disabilities, and more were not taken into account. Instead, houses were built one size fits all. What the National Housing Authority's regional manager told me is that the clear disparity in quality boils down to a smaller budget on the government's end. You'll hear more from him in our next episode. But the question of where all that foreign aid and assistance went remains unanswered. And guess what? The local government in Tacloban City doesn't know either.
When we were originally working on this story, actually, what we were hoping to find was immediately after Yolanda, a lot of foreign money poured in. And when we tried to check up on how those funds were being spent, how much of those pledges were received.
They will not provide you.
Yeah.
That's Ted Hobson from the Tacloban City Housing and Community Development Office. He said he even tried going directly to the private sector to find out how foreign funding was being spent.
Because I myself were asking, I cannot name the INGO, because they put up, you know, we have a housing project. Mm. They said, you know, they donated 12 million. Mm. So we checked and everything. Out of 12 million, it's only 3 million that they put in. So ask how much can you provide us a copy? They will not.
Yeah.
Even the cost of putting up evacuation centers, they will not give you. I don't know why.
Yeah.
It should have been transparent.
Were there any funds from foreign countries or NGOs directly received by the LGU, or was it all spent by?
I don't think so. Mm. I think it's important that it should be transparent, because there's always doubt, especially when you deal with the government.
And that was today's episode of Teka Teka News. Again, I'm Bella Perez Rubio. Carl Dave Syatt edited this episode. Our executive producer is Jill Caro, and our senior news editor is Veronica Uy. In the final episode of this special series, we sit down with officials in Tacloban City, and they tell us why and how things went wrong with the Yolanda Housing Program. They also tell us what they wish they could have done differently. Stay tuned for that next week. Thanks for listening.
This special series was developed with the support of Journalism Fund Europe.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.